You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's News Project. It's a pleasure to have you with us as always here on Thursday, January 30th. Also a great pleasure to be joined here in the studio by two colleagues here in the news business. Luke Nathan is a reporter who writes for the Bennington Banner and Manchester Journal, and Darren Marcy is the managing editor of the Manchester Journal. Great to have you both with us again.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
Welcome back, and thanks for making the time to come in today to talk about some of the recent headlines of the past couple of weeks. A lot going on. Town meeting, not exactly right around the corner, but we're getting close there. About a little over a month to go until town meeting begins, so we're starting to see some budgets getting finalized, in particular some of the school budgets getting finalized. And Luke, you've been writing a couple of stories about some of them, the Taconic and Green, the Windhall School District, and Medway School District are three that I've seen some stories on. Get us up to date. What's going on in those three areas?
Sure. So one of the big changes that's affecting all three of the districts that you just mentioned, although one to a lesser extent, is a recent decision by an arbitrator on the first statewide health care plan that affects all school employees. And one of the big changes that's come from that is that all of those school employees, or at least most of them, will be able to access all tiers of coverage. So not just individual coverage, but coverage for families. As you can imagine, that has some concerns about, you know, raised costs. And indeed, each of these districts have sort of pointed to that as a reason for their increased budgets. In TNG, which is planning on a $33.5 million budget, which is a 4% increase over the current year, they are saying that they're already budgeting for $100,000 or a little over $100,000 increased healthcare costs, but they say that the increase could be more than that if everybody, all support staff who are now eligible for higher tiers of coverage make that switch or upgrade, so to speak.
So it's too early to know really how many people might take it. A lot of people might, or not so many, and numbers are going to be hard to figure.
That's right. Yeah. So they're kind of they're planning for some increase, but they're not planning for the worst case scenario. I mean, maybe they're prepared if that happens, but they're not sure exactly how much to project on that front. The other sort of thing that's driving costs a little bit in TNG is the pre-K expansion. You can remember this issue; it's probably been talked about on this program.
Saga.
So there had been a proposal a year or two ago to kind of scale back some of the pre-K program to try to kind of level the playing field across this very large district. In fact, I can't rattle off all the towns from memory, but just so we're on the same page, it's Danby, Dorset, Landgrove, Londonderry, Manchester, Mount Tabor, Peru, Sunderland, and Weston.
That's a bunch.
One day I'll remember all of that. So the way things stand now, Manchester, MEMS rather, has a four-day program for just four-year-olds, a five-day program for four-year-olds. Courier has a four-day program. Courier's in Danby, a four-day program for three- and four-year-olds. And then the district also pays for four-year-olds to enroll with private providers at 15 hours a week and three-year-olds at 10 hours a week, which is the state minimum requirement. Next year, the only change, so they're going to basically preserve all of that, but then bump four-year-olds at private providers up as much as 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So a slight increase. And the board also adopted what is, I guess, sort of a symbolic resolution, if you will, have it a goal be to not reduce the number of hours that they offer anymore. Mm-hmm. So they're going to try to build upon that. Of course, that could change if a new board came in and decided to rip the resolution up. But at least symbolically, I think it was important for some of the supporters that want to see pre-K become more equitable and more accessible across the district.
Yeah, well, that's been quite a subject of conversation, like as you say, the last couple of years. A lot of folks are eager to see that you know, being more available for more people and also more equitable, I guess, is another one of the issues that's popped up, that, you know, getting equal access across the entire district.
Especially to the mountain towns. And I should say, too, that all of the pre-K students can theoretically attend the public programs at Currier or at MEMS. And there is space, I think, in both of those programs currently. But it's a question of how transportation, you know, could parents, you know, conceivably drive their pre-K students to those programs? You know, so are they really accessible, even though they are in theory, you know? Medawee School District, just briefly, this is a district that serves Paulette and Rupert. It's a $5.9 million budget this year, which is a 6% increase. They operate one school, the Medawee Community School, for pre-K through 6th grade, and then the 7th through 12th graders have school choice. This is a merged school district under Act 46, so I think a year or two ago, again, it merged. And what they've seen since the merger is the 7th through 12th graders are increasingly choosing to go to Vermont schools versus New York schools just across the border, which had previously been their district's designated schools, the ones in New York, which I think the tuition in New York for the New York schools is subsidized, so the cost is cheaper per pupil for New York rather than
Vermont. Quite a bit cheaper.
Vermont, quite a bit cheaper,
like 5,000 versus what, 16 or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, I guess, you know, maybe the constituents, while they may like having that school choice, that ability to choose between New York or Vermont, the district is facing some increased costs as a result of that. And I think they've also seen their student population increase a bit.
They still can go to the New York schools, though, right, if they want.
That's right, yes. But, you know, they're choosing to go to, increasingly so. You know, there's still a substantial fraction of those students that are going to New York schools. It's just not as much, or, you know, an increasing share is going to Vermont. And then last but not least, Wynn Hall, which has its own school district as part, all three of these are part of the Bennington-Rutland Supervisory Union. they're seeing a 12.7% increase to a $3.8 million budget, which the board chair said falls kind of within their historic kind of rate of increase. The healthcare issue won't affect them as much because they do not operate a school. But they still have to pay kind of their share of the supervisory union administrative costs. So they're seeing some increases as far as healthcare, but not as much. Mm-hmm. They're also seeing a steady increase in students. They're budgeting for about 15 ghost students, so to speak, which are students that have not yet moved to the district, but likely will.
Might be, yeah.
This current year, I think they've seen 20 students move to the district, which is even more than that. So it's a pretty significant number of students that are coming to the district every year. And again, the board chair, Jennifer Samuelson, told me that she cited that school choice is definitely a factor in that.
Because they can go to schools down in Manchester or wherever in the district, I guess.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, down in Manchester, down the mountain, Darren, the select board there is, I guess, moving towards finalizing their budget, but there's also been some interesting other stories going on.
Yeah, there's a few things going on in Manchester, and I was going to let Luke take this too, but I think he's tired. So, the Manchester Select Board did finalize their budget January 23rd. They've been picking at it a little bit for the last couple of weeks. Talking with the Select Board Chairman Ivan Beatty, and he says I'm not quite as stingy as I used to be. He said, but I still look at every line, and he's looking for ways to save. And they did a little bit of that, and they had to, because healthcare again is affecting the Manchester town things. They said one of the it's not a problem, it's a good thing, but one of the things that they can't control is whether they hire an employee that's a single individual or has a family, and the costs are different for healthcare for those two situations. They've happened to have hired some family people lately, and so their costs are going up. Plus the just basic increase in healthcare costs. I think the number was something like 24% just for healthcare in there. In that line item, that drove the overall cost for their employee costs up 14%. Ironically, their payroll costs are down 0.5%. So you can see what's driving that cost. So they spent quite a bit of time in the last few weeks looking for ways to offset some of those numbers. And they've done it. And they've done it despite the fact that they've actually are adding money to the budget this year. I think it's up, spending is up something close to $1 million. But they're offsetting that with close to $1 million and almost $1 million in new and increased revenues. The local option tax is a real big deal in Manchester. The amount of tax that people pay on their property is nowhere near what the town spends, and the difference is made up of that local option tax. That being a destination community, there's a lot of rooms and meals tax money that flows into this community that pays for a lot of services. And so that's a very fortunate thing to be spending money that you didn't have to take from one of your neighbors. They've pinched their pennies. They've maximized everything they could, and they've come up with a budget that is about 3.5% or right at, no, I'm sorry, 3.25% above what it was last year, which several of the board members said you can't have a level funded budget. It catches up to you real quickly. You can do that for a year, maybe two, and then suddenly you're paying a 10% increase to make up for it. And so they try to stick to around 3% or less every year, and they came in at 3.25 this year. Ironically, if the grand list grows at a rate which they think it will, which is 0.5%, that will actually only end up being a 3.1% increase. So there's some interesting budget numbers. It's, you get into the soup at this time of the year, your head starts spinning, and you don't even remember what you're talking about at times.
Budget stories are such fun.
Yeah. Exactly. And then the other thing that makes your head swim is planning and zoning. And that's where another one of the big stories has come from out of Manchester.
We've had an interesting back and forth between one property owner in Manchester and the town.
What's going on? Andy Tarantino, owner of a Safe Place Self-Storage. I think I've got the name of that right. Sorry, Andy, if I'm wrong.
Sounds good to me.
Something like that. His business is located down in the Aquifer Protection Zone, right on the edge of it. I just went blank on the street name. But in a rezoning effort that the town went through about a year ago, no, it was in 2018, he ended up in a multi-use 2 zone. I don't know all of the restrictions on the multi-use 2, but one of the things that came out about that is that self-storage was not a... And I'll never get these terms correct. I went through this earlier. It's not a permitted use. So he suddenly found his business being a non-permitted use. He was grandfathered in. He wasn't going to have to close or change anything, but he felt that it impacted his business's marketability.
If he wants to sell it.
Yeah, if he wants to sell it or expand it or those kinds of things. And he felt it restricted him and you know, was they basically were taking money out of his pocket. And so he went into... what he thought was an oversight. He thought it was just going to be something he could easily rectify. And that was last March. Recently, in the past week or so, the Planning and Zoning Commission has, I may have the name of that committee wrong, Planning and Zoning Board.
Planning Commission,
that's right. They actually changed and made that, at least on a temporary basis, a conforming use.
Okay.
So he got what he wanted, finally, but he has been chasing this with attorney fees and a land use specialist. I can't remember exactly what that title is, but he's hired a couple of guys that have been working toward this for him. And his attorney, Jim Dingle, would not put a dollar figure on it for me yesterday, but Andy has been using the number $14,000 that he wants the town to now reimburse him for his costs for pursuing this. It gets a little sticky because he's accused a couple of town employees of not playing fair.
Right.
So he's, there were some emails and some text messages. The town says they're just doing their job, you know, looking out for town's best interest, sharing information, those kinds of things. Mr. Tarantino thought it was some back channel things to you know, block his efforts and those kinds of things. Select Board Chairman Mr. Beatty said there's been a lot of noise around this this issue.
Yeah, there sure has.
Yeah, Mr. Tarantino started a petition, got like 250-60 signatures on it, riled some folks up in town, or thinks the town's out to get him. And it's basically a resolved issue now, though, with the change in the zoning. Mm. So now the what's left is for Mr. Tarantino to seek reimbursement for his costs and see what happens there.
Yeah, okay, well, to be continued then. Yeah. Well, meanwhile, Luke, down the road in Arlington, we have an interesting story going on there around the town administrator position that voters approved last year during town meeting voting. The question is always kind of... been out there as to whether or not this is a part-time or a full-time position. Seems like half the select board there seems to think it's a full-time job. The other half seems to think, no, it's a part-time position, or at least that's where we should start and see how that goes. But it's going to come up. I guess they had hoped to fill a position by January 1st, but the three finalists, for one reason or another, didn't work out. So now we're back to square one again. Still debating the part-time versus full-time role.
That's right. So we are still debating that. The select board had established a committee that's still intact, I guess, to search for candidates and do the interviews and then forward the finalists to the select board. They ended up having no finalists to really forward to the select board. And one of the members of the committee, who's also a select board member, Matthew Bykowski, basically said that he basically attributed the part-time stipulation to that. He said that's why they couldn't, you know, get a candidate that they found, qualified. So now they're debating, it seems like there's a consensus on the committee, and this is how Matthew Bykowski and also I think Daniel Harvey, another select board member who's on the committee, they both feel like we need to re-advertise this clearly. We have this, the voters have told us to go hire this person. We need to do it at a full-time rate now. A salaried position, much like, many other towns do it. That's the only way that we're going to be able to fill this position. No one's going to want to move to Arlington for just a part-time position. You may get lucky, and get someone who's maybe recently retired and just wants something to do, kind of on the side. But even if you do find that person, there may not be enough hours to commit to this job, especially if you are if you believe that you want to move Arlington forward, you want them to take on more responsibilities, apply for more grants, whatever. You need someone that's a full-time position. On the other side of it, Cynthia Browning, who's also a state rep and on the select board, basically said that, she's a little bit cautious about what that would mean in terms of the jump in cost. Right now, they pay Chairman Keith Squires $16,000 to be the interim administrator.
Right.
If they were to go from $16,000 to as high as figures were quoted as high as $100,000, inclusive of healthcare costs.
That would be with the benefits.
Yes, yeah. With benefits. But it seems like they're more now. So this discussion has happened at a couple of select board meetings this month. They haven't come to a final decision. They've now said that they're going to hold a joint meeting with the select with the advisory search committee to talk it out more. But it seems like there's at least some support, save for maybe Cynthia Browning, although she may come around to some sort of compromise, and Keith Squires, who has said at a previous meeting that he doesn't think that there's enough work to be done to warrant the full-time position. Maybe they can find, they may try to find a compromise in the $70,000 to $80,000 range, inclusive of benefits, so that would be a lower, salary than that. One other thing, they have a placeholder in the budget that they have not yet adopted of $50,000, which was supposed to be a part-time, cover a part-time position with a little bit of money for training and stuff like that. That may be the amount that they will use even if it becomes a full-time position, just given that, it's the end of January now. They may, they're going to have to re-advertise the position. They're going to have to interview candidates. It may be months before they hire a new town administrator, assuming they get someone this time. So they'll only have, conceivably half of a year to work. So it's not moot because, it would still be they would still need to decide whether to advertise the position at full time or part time, and you know, see whether that person wants to commit to full time versus part time. But it may be immaterial as far as the finances of the town go for this year, if that. If you follow that,
it's an interesting kind of difference of vision, I guess, of where you want to see the town going. Is it kind of like, you know, just keep the status quo kind of rolling along, and you know, everything is managed, versus that more expanded vision that folks who were in the Arlington Area Renewal Project have been pushing, who were one of the ones who had tried to advance this idea of a town administrator back last year, you know, seemed to see a bigger role, like you were saying, submitting for grants and stuff like that.
Yep.
That right now, I guess the town isn't really,
or the town at least has to rely on volunteers who may try to pitch in or kind of lead these things on a more kind of less centrally planned kind of way. You might
may
say.
Or may not be experienced at it,
right,
because that's a skill,
right,
of sort for
right.
sure. Well, that's it could be interesting to follow, and then of course the. The other aspect of this is kind of intriguing is that, as you said, Todd Wilkins, who's on the Arlington School Board, he's the chair of the school board at the moment, is throwing his hat in the ring for a select board slot that's currently held by Keith Squires.
He is. And so this, and the board elects the chairman amongst themselves, so it's not as if he's running for chairman, but although he could, I guess, pursue that seat if elected. But yes, he is challenging Keith Squires, who has been on the select board for decades. When I talked to Todd Wilkins a few days ago, he said that, you know, he couldn't remember the last time that Squires was challenged for his seat. And, you know, he had nice things to say about Keith Squires. He didn't seem to regard it as a kind of a personal thing. But he said that, you know, I feel like it's time for the town to move in a new direction. And I, you know, he has been involved, as you mentioned, with the Arlington Area Renewal Project and their efforts to advance this town administrator position. He was on the governance committee of the Arlington Area Renewal Project, kind of advancing that vision. And so it's very interesting that he is challenging Keith Squires, who has already said at a recent board meeting that he doesn't envision himself staying in that position for very long. I did reach out to him this week as well, and I didn't hear back, but I expect to talk to him at some point about, you know, how he sees this challenge. Todd Wilkins was at that meeting, at the most recent meeting, and he was pushing the select board, saying, along with one other resident, you know, you have this mandate from the voters. I think that a full-time position is the way that you're going to attract talent, and then have someone in there who can, you know, help work to attract young families to the area, or help the school board or the select board work more collaboratively with the school board, things like that, that maybe the town can't currently do, or at least not do perhaps as well as it could if it had a full-time administrator.
Mm. Well, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely be following that as we get on into town meeting, see how that winds up getting resolved. Just one other thing I just throw in here, this town meeting related, is the business around the communications union districts. And here I have to make a bit of a full disclosure statement, because I've been working and helping the committee or task force on the Southern Vermont Communications Union District, or proposed Communications Union District. One of the things that we may see come out of town meeting is that district being formed, and we require two towns to vote yes. And there are, by last count, I think 13 towns, every town in Bennington County, I believe, you know, Pownall to Rupert, basically. So, and what this would do is an attempt basically to secure a feasibility study grant from the state for $60,000 or a portion of to study whether or not it would be worthwhile to, or at least cost effective to, bring high-speed internet broadband service to areas that are currently underserved. And what's interesting, if you look at the state maps, it looks like Bennington County is not in bad shape, really, by the numbers. It seems like we're certainly in the top half of the state in terms of accessibility to, you know, modern-day broadband. But clearly there's a lot of folks that still think that there's room for improvement there. And so it will be interesting to see. I mean, the big selling point is that basically they're, you know, there's no real financial exposure to a town or the tax rate. This would be something that would just be funded by subscriber fees or other grants or other sources than municipal taxes. So it's been an interesting project for sure, and I'm going to be curious to see where that all lands.
One thing that I think is important to talk about, and I'm not in favor or opposed to this. I don't know enough about it to even have an opinion yet. But one of the big questions I've heard over and over, and you can answer this, is the potential liability of towns who get involved. As I've had it explained to me, there is no risk to the towns. There's no way the town taxpayers are going to be footing the bill for if it fails or anything like that. So
I would I think that's written right into the legislation, Act 79, which passed last year. Basically, you know, protects the towns and municipalities from any kind of financial impact. I mean, the big example that everyone points to is the EC Fiber group up on, well, east central Vermont, Orange and Washington counties, basically. They've been able to bring broadband service to about 27 different communities now up there that were kind of struggling in that area before. But it took a long time. I mean, that's the other factor I think some people need to bear in mind, is that this is not an overnight solution. Even if, let's say, the $60,000 grant comes our way, it's not going to transform things overnight or even over a year, probably, because there'd be a lot of infrastructure that would need to be built and wires that would have to be strung, and that would take time and a certain amount of revenue. And the big thing is to find out, well, how many people would want to have this? You know,
right.
A competitor either to the existing providers or some way we would work with them. So
it's been my perception, I covered this a little bit, that the select board seemed pretty open to the idea. It received a pretty welcome reception, I think. And they at least said, all right, let's put it on the ballot. Let's see what happens. Maybe it will get voted down, or if it gets voted on, and then if the district is wins this grant to study its feasibility, it may well find that it's not feasible. In which case,
party's over. And we're back to whatever it was we were doing before.
Right.
Can you hear me now?
Right.
Can you speak up? Well, before we go, Darren, you had mentioned earlier something about local option taxes being a big part of the Manchester budget. And a couple of towns have been talking about adding local option taxes to the mix. Just in a couple of minutes, Bennington is the only town, I believe, though, that has it on their warning at the moment. But
there may be one other mountain town.
Londonderry,
that sounds right. But I know in Bennington, the Bennington Area Chamber of Commerce has been one of the groups that's been advocating for this. It'll be interesting to see. It may be somewhat contentious, I gather, from the stories that we've done already. It'll be interesting to see what fraction of the population supports it, but it may be sold as a way of kind of offsetting the tax burden on residents, to property owners, basically.
It's a hugely popular in Manchester. Manchester's budget, I don't remember the numbers, but a decent chunk of Manchester's spending every year comes from like the rooms and meals tax or the various local option tax. Recently, somebody, John O'Keefe, not somebody, John O'Keefe was telling me that Manchester's tax burden is the 17th lowest in the state. 251 towns, Manchester's 17th from the bottom. Like four or five of those towns don't even have people in them. They're gores or whatever. They're trees.
Organized towns or whatever.
So they basically don't have a budget. And like another five or so of the towns that are have lower tax rates, some of them are even large, like Williston, and it's because they have local option taxes that fund a big chunk of the of their bill. I'm sure there's negatives. You're going to pay a little more when you go out to eat or those kinds of things. But if you live in a town like Manchester, we have a lot of visitors. That's where it really benefits the local economy.
Well, that was the argument used way back when Manchester, I think, was the first town in Vermont that put in a local option tax back in the late 90s, I believe, if memory serves. And the thought there was, that's a way of having our tourists and visitors help defray the cost of the town. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be borne by property taxes or other taxes that would sort of impact local residents more. So interesting to see that more communities are thinking about that maybe weren't necessarily ones you might think of as tourism towns, although they would probably like to think that they were.
I should mention, too, you know, amid the town administrator debate, Matthew Bykowski, the select board member, right, you know, kind of threw out the idea of, you know, perhaps a local option tax could help to fund the town administrator position. You know, I don't know. It didn't progress beyond that, and I don't know whether they'll pursue it or not, but it was at least talked about as a possibility.
Well, that's about all we got time for today. I want to thank you both for coming in and bringing us up to speed and all that's going on around the North Shire, and we'll have you back in real soon.
Thanks for putting up with us.
Figure out what happened at town meeting.
Sure. Thank you.
And thank all of you for being with us again. We'll look forward to seeing you the next time. And meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.